Okay. Now, when you said you had this all
fulfillment, it's almost maybe too much of a good thing. I mean, if you really do the three last Sundays of the old, and then you get into Advent, and you got at least 2 weeks of the same stuff, it'd be nice to do. And maybe the Sunday of the fulfillment. Well, I don't know. You can. That's still eschatological. And yet, on the alternative is to make Advent into, I don't want to say pre-Christmas, because that's what Advent is, but you end up making Advent into mini-Christmas time. And with more and more things going on in parishes that are Christmas things that happen during Advent, this is kind of a tension that you feel. I mean, you got your Sunday school pageant, you got your Christmas choir program, you got this, that, and the other thing. Everyone's thinking Christmas. You got the Christmas decorations up. And it's very difficult to draw the line between Advent and Christmas, that Advent sort of gets blended into sort of preliminary Christmas. And the hymns you pick are probably going to be as much Christmas hymns as they are Advent hymns in Advent, you see? And it's important to try to maintain that distinction and to kind of wrestle with those problems. One of the biggest problems in the church here that I always thought in the parish was that you don't have enough Christmas. I mean, people want to sing Christmas hymns and all the nice carols, and you really only get Christmas Eve and Christmas Day and the Sunday after Christmas to do that. And the Sunday after Christmas, you only get about, 20% of your people there anyway. So you end up using Christmas hymns in Advent or Christmas hymns in Epiphany, and there's a sense in which that's okay, but it's kind of hard to. And if anything, I guess, rather than giving in to these problems, one could try to fight the tide, though you're always fighting a losing battle, that has to give way to some practicalities, I suppose. By emphasizing that, after all, especially for us Gentiles, it is Epiphany more than Christmas that is the celebration of Christ's birth, and perhaps to trump Christmas with a little bit more of an Epiphany celebration is one way to do that. But again, we don't have any, great Epiphany hymns in the same number that we have great Christmas hymns that everybody knows and loves and wants to sing. Well, all that being as it may, let's do our lesson here. Jeremiah 33, 14 to 16. Not a very long text. We're in the restoration texts here, the so-called Book of Comfort or Consolation, that Jeremiah 33, 14 to 16, that begins in chapter 30, where Jeremiah, whose message is essentially one of judgment and almost anticipating 586 happening, has these chapters of hope and restoration here, part of which is the New Covenant passage that we looked at as the Old Testament lesson for Reformation. Also occurs as the Old Testament lesson for Maundy Thursday on at least one of the cycles, because it talks about the new covenant that seems to match up with the new covenant in my blood. But this particular verse or section matches up very nicely also with what is predominantly a judgment oracle in Jeremiah 22, but turns positive in 23, verses 5 and following, where you have this other great text that's virtually a parallel of this one. And I don't want to beat this to death, but if you look at Jeremiah 23, 5, you have similar stuff. Behold, days are coming, I will raise up for David a tzemach tzaddik, a righteous branch. And a king will reign and deal correctly. And he will do mishpat and tzedakah in the land. And in those days, Judah will be saved and Yisrael will dwell in safety. And this is his name by which he will be called, Yahweh Tzidkenu. Yahweh is our tzedek, our righteousness. Now that's Jeremiah 23, verses 5 and 6. Our lesson is Jeremiah 33, verse 14. Hine yamim ba'im ne'um Yahweh, Vehekimothi eth hadavar hatov. Hine calls your attention to the here and nowness of something. Look, pay attention, behold. Yamim, the plural of yom, days. Ba'im is the participle, masculine plural of the verb bo. Several of you are in beginning Hebrew. We haven't done participles yet, but you kind of know how they work from Greek, I suppose. This is the ing form, translated, days are coming. Not a finite tense in Hebrew. Behold, days are coming. And this idiom of hene plus the participle is very typical of prophetic speeches and is actually dubbed the imminent future, as almost a grammatical technical term, for this use of the participle describing things that are sort of on the verge of happening. They haven't happened, but they're not completely and only future either. They are being sort of unpacked, unraveled, even as we speak, but we're not really there yet. Days are coming, Na'um, Yahweh. Na'um is this word for oracular speech, so oracle of Yahweh. And note the wow consecutive here with the perfect. Hekimothi, this is from kum, to rise. It is the hifil of kum, which makes it causative, cause something else to rise, i.e. raise. The force of the wow consecutive with the perfect simply matches this to the contextual verb form, which is the participle. So I would translate this, I am going to raise up, or I am about to raise up. Eth hadavar hatov. Direct object. I am going to establish the word hatov, the good one. The good word. Interesting. This is usually translated, I don't know what English translations do with this, something like the promise. But it's interesting that the Hebrew is simply the good word. It's not bad. I mean, I guess if you want a gospel handle, you could even translate this the good news, huh? Gospel itself. The promise, though, is probably, I would agree, a good English equivalent here, but it's the good word. One should dig around in Jeremiah. Does he ever talk about an evil word or a bad word? God's judgment is often described as something ra, something evil and wicked, in which case this would be even a more striking contrast, sort of as gospel is to law, as good, so good is to bad. The good word, asher, which, debarti, I spoke, a good use of debar, or deber in the PAL for declare in a promissory way, which I promised, el beit Yisrael va'al beit Yehuda. El to beit Yisrael, the house of Israel, va'al beit Yehuda, house of Judah. Now, here's a good case where you don't know if the switch from El to Al is deliberate and intending to show a distinction, or is simply synonymous, as it seems to be in many places where El and Al overlap. That's a toughie. Someday I'd like to study these in detail and actually try to come up with a hypothesis on it. I would tend to favor the suggestion that if a different word is picked, it's picked for some intentional purposes, that these are not just sort of variables for the sake of breaking up monotony. In which case, what does he say? Which I promised to the house of Israel and concerning the house of Judah. Why the difference? Is there intentionally a distinction here between Israel and Judah? Well, historically, there's certainly a big distinction between Israel and Judah at this point. Namely, Israel's done with. They're already gone. But Judah is still waiting for 586 to come, presuming that that's where we are in Jeremiah's lifetime. Maybe he's sort of heightening the contrast and saying that, I mean, to put it in Lutheran terms, you really don't get the gospel until you've got the full blast of the law figured out. You see? That it's not until your conscience is truly terrorized that the gospel is truly sweet music to your ears. And that's not a bad summary of the whole book of Jeremiah, that before you get to Easter, you have to understand Good Friday, if you will. Before we get to the new life of baptism, one has to understand the death of the old life. 15. Bayamim ha'heim, in the days, those ones. Again, for you in beginning Hebrew, we haven't come to this yet, but you'll notice the noun haim there. Bayamim ha'heim as the personal pronoun for they. This doubles as the demonstrative pronoun those. The days, those ones. Uva eighth, and in the time, eighth means time, hahi. Note that you also recognize, top of the next page, hahi is the pronoun she, which also doubles as a demonstrative pronoun now in the feminine singular, that, it's the singular of those. And in the time, that one, etzmiach, I will tzamach, imperfect. Root tzamach in the hifil. Tzamach, we just had the same word back in chapter 23 for branch. A tzemach is this shoot, this green thing that comes out of the stump of Jesse, going back to all those Isaiah prophecies. So hifil, I will cause to sprout to David for Dawid a tzemach tzedakah, a righteous branch or shoot, and he will do asa, perfect while consecutive, mishpat and tzedakah ba'aretz, in the land. Got it? Again, mishpat and tzedakah. This is again idiom for the sort of the ultimate job description of a good king. What are you supposed to do? Mishpat and tzedakah. 16. Bayamim ha'heim, in the days, those ones, i.e. in those days, tiwasha Yehuda, tiwasha is niphal. We haven't come to this yet in beginning Hebrew. It's from the root yasha, first yod. By the way, we talked about that yod and wow interchange. You see that the yasha goes to washa. Yasha is the verb from which we get the words like Yeshua, Jesus, which means saves. So this is passive. Tuasha Yehuda. Judah will be Yashad Virushlayim, and Jerusalem Tishkon will Shakan. Kal imperfect of Shakan. Shakan means to literally tabernacle. Reside semi-permanently. You're no longer a wandering Aramean, but you haven't reached home either. It's not a bad description of what we generally call our earthly pilgrimage. And Jerusalem will reside la betach. Betach is a word for safety, safekeeping. La is idiomatic. For the sake of, or with reference to safety. The best translation of these is usually as an adverb, safely. Vze asher yikra la. And this, ze, is what he will call to her. Idiom for what her name will be. Note that it's feminine, okay? Who is being named here? It's feminine. This isn't the righteous branch that is the Davidic line, but this is Judah and Jerusalem. Now, that's the major distinction between what is virtually the same oracle in chapter 23 and this, and here. In 23, it's the branch of David whose name will be Yahweh Tzidkenu, and here it's Judah and Jerusalem that will wear the same name, Yahweh Tzidkenu. Yahweh is our tzedek, our righteousness. By the way, just to comment on that form at the end, Yahweh Tzidkenu, we just talked about this. Tzedek is a segalit noun that, with pronominal suffix, reverts back to that closed first syllable. Do you see that? We just looked at that the other day. Melech goes to Malki, Sefer goes to Sifri, Tzedek goes to Tzidkenu, our tzedek. But it would seem to me some food for some theological reflection here that the same name, you see, is applied both to the Messianic king and to the Messianic people, the restored Judah and Jerusalem, so that the identity or the identification of the king and people always is sort of combined, right? Which comes out in the New Testament wash in phrases like being in Christo, or being Christians, or wearing the name of the God of our salvation, and that we have our identity incorporated into his identity. Okay, well, that's it. Rather short oracle here, but it's time to move on anyway. Any quick questions, Jim? You ready? Before we do yet some more New Testament eschatology. I already made half of your speech about Advent themes.